basic, simple language. This does not interfere with progress in all the fields of advanced learning, but it means that the grand scope of science is to include all that is necessary for the good of man. It is not enough that science will invent things. It is not enough that science will put an extra curl in the paper clip. It is more valuable, more reasonable, more necessary that science helps to make each human being better as a person, more responsible, more efficient, and more kindly and understanding. Any form of knowledge that is purely intellectual and eliminates the equation of human relationships, any form of knowledge that does not have affection and love of truth, as well as skill in searching, all knowledge that is not dominated by values, by integrities, by emotional commitments, any such type of knowledge will not solve the problem of the 21st century. We're going to have to do better. And if we watch the symptoms, it is observable that we are doing better. All around the world, there are revolts and rebellions against materialism. Materialism was the great sin of the intellectual. The intellectual tried to prove he was emancipated by convincing people he believed in nothing. This type of superiority is fading out in nations. Country after country is giving it up. Individual after individual is changing his polarities. And throughout the world, there are groups rising up for the purpose of restoring the basic values of human relationships. This is all to the good. But it is also good that the new 20th century should have a proper introduction. It should be presented to us skillfully, wisely, lovingly, and factually. And it might be a wonderful thing if the scientific community would introduce us into a century in which principles and integrities will dominate all other considerations, and science will prove that the beginning of science is honesty. And without honesty, science is valueless. It is no longer necessary to assume that some people can understand and other people cannot understand. Science can talk down to anybody. It can tell the simplest person the facts of life. It also can reach up to the most attenuated atmospheres and explain problems beyond the comprehension of the laity. But in either case, whether it's the top or the bottom, the entire instruction should end in the one concept, basic and inevitable, that honor is the basis of survival, integrity is the basis of the continuance of patterns, and all of the logic in the world points to one thing: that which is not honest is not logical. It is not true if it is not for the good of all. And the concept of trying to build up private virtues and permit public vices to continue will never solve our problems. So I think we should think very much about this matter, and we should think about it in the education of our children. If the educational facilities are not available, then we will find out why we are not able to educate our own children. And one of the reasons we won't be able to educate them is because science has given us the television. Everything it does in a way that cripples something. Because in every case, the scientist, trustworthy or not, takes the attitude that the public will use what he discovers constructively. If he hasn't learned yet that this is not true, he's going to be a long time in learning. Actually, he cannot depend upon the integrity of anyone except himself. And if each of the scientists and each of the laymen have this integrity, our new century will be a great success. Right at the beginning of it, a textbook could be written, a very valuable and important textbook. A textbook summing up the mistakes of the past and setting out how they can be corrected. We've had wars from the beginning, but the worst ones in the present century. We've had despots, madmen, fools, anarchists in every century, but the biggest ones have been in our present century. We have had all kinds of crime waves. We've had religious intolerance. We've had atheism. We've had all types of education. We have had martyrs. We have had all types of sufferers, trying to help us to live better lives. All these together could make one tremendous statement of what we are here for and why, and how we are going to stay here if we keep the rules, and very likely leave if we don't keep the rules. Here we are worrying about whether or not there are invasions from Mars or outer space, and we're not sure at all how long the atmosphere on our planet will be suitable to breathe. Nothing is being done to correct the problems. They are talked about. We have money set aside to take care of rubbish heaps. We have all these things. But the great minds are not working with that. The great minds are working on how to possibly conquer the solar system, which is not very likely, but at the same time could be dramatized by some motion picture company. Actually, the whole attention is away from the reality of the trouble. We do not face the problem. We look away from it, and when someone has a pleasant experience, we dramatize that and assume that all is going to go well. We do not face the problems. And without facing them, we will just simply carry them into the next century as part of a burden which we really don't want. We don't need it, and we shouldn't have it. Now, when we get down to science on some of the other situations in which it all plays a part, and which we should know something of, we have to realize that science is also based upon mathematics. Actually, mathematics was the first of the divine sciences. And the sciences of Pythagoras and the ancients were three: mathematics, astronomy, and music. Now, one thing we are having trouble with is music. What are we going to carry forward into the future? Are we going to carry Beethoven and Bach, or are we going to carry hard rock? Now, here is the interesting thing. How has it happened that some scientific groups haven't indicated clearly the difficulties resulting from the perversion of music? We have little articles occasionally appearing warning against it, or some brief mention on the television. But why doesn't science break this thing down scientifically and medically and give us the solid facts and stand behind them? The same is true in all these different fields of arts. Why do we not get the solid facts? Why does science not include most of the wisdom that has come to us from the past? Now, in architecture, we have the same problem. Architecture was one of the great arts of antiquity. Architecture is not merely putting up buildings to put business houses into. Architecture is a sacred science. It is a science of making the world suitable for people to live in. Every building that is asymmetrically involved, is incorrect, is poorly built, worse designed, is a disgrace to society and also a danger. Pythagoras in Greece walked the streets of Athens, supposedly. I doubt if he was ever there, but one of his philosophers were. Then this philosopher came to a building. He struck the key keynote of that building on his lute. He said, if I strike this building's lute, this keynote loud enough, it will crumble the building. And on another occasion, he was Pythagorean, was present when a young man who was very angry over the crime which had been committed against his father, dashed into a banquet with a drawn dagger to kill the man who was responsible for disgracing his father. As he reached up for the dagger to drive it into the man at the banquet table, a Pythagorean who was there struck a note on the lute. The young man was paralyzed. He couldn't move. And he was led away without having committed this crime for which he had the intention. All these things are science. What are we doing with them? Nothing. Maybe someone comes along, writes a little book on this philosophy of music. Science pays no attention. All they are working with, apparently, is one little facet. But we are people living in a world. We have many sides to our natures. We have parents and children. We have friends and guardians. We have all kinds of relationships with people. These are not considered. They're not identified at all. The only thing is pure science. Well, pure science is, in a sense, sterile. It does not have any value to us unless it helps us to do something or to be something. There is no science that can waste its time out among the stars forever. It has got to get down and do the things that are necessary now. Our world has so many things the matter with it that all the scientists put together could work on the job for the next 100 years. It has every kind of a problem, more coming up every day. And yet, up to now, the whole policy has been to keep on creating the problem and hoping that it will go away. Well, for a scientist to hope the truth will go away is very unscientific. He is not talking straight. He is making remarks that are not worthy of him. He must know directly that if he wants the trouble to go away, he's got to make it go away. And he has no intentions of doing that. That would interfere with his comforts and his pleasures. Now, young people starting out under this particular glamour have very little inducement to do anything. A few of them may go into athletics, a few will win in the Olympic Games, but for the most part they will drift through into some mediocre job and hope for the best. They are not given any value to work for. They are not taught why they are builders of a human family. They do not know why that each generation is a foundation stone upon which an infinite future is being built. No one pays any attention to these things. And if someone quiet little person gets up and says something, they are laughed down by the sophisticated intellectuals. There's no place. And I noticed I was working on a little research problem here that has a little side on this, probably not very well known. The great national poem of the Nordic people in Finland is the Kalevala, a poem that tells the whole story, like Homer's Odyssey and Iliad, of the history of the people in myth and legend. Now, there are two versions of this exist in English. They are not divided in very much from each other in time. Both are 19th or 18th century. But the translation of the poem, which consists, by the way, of 27,000 verses, is different in each. In one, for instance, there is a definite statement of what we might term of something mystical, something that could well have been part of a people who, like the early American Indian, had a great oral tradition but no written language. So in this one version, it says that the hero goes forth to seek the lost word. Now, the lost word is an interesting term to appear in a national epic, but it is a familiar term to a great many people. And another line where it refers to the word of the master is interesting also, because it indicates that these people had certain esoteric beliefs. The other translation changes both of those so statements so that they are meaningless. The probabilities are that the first person that wrote the original one was a little bit enlightened. The second one wanted to make sure that such ridiculous enlightenment was not perpetuated. So he took it out. Now, if it was in, it should stay in. If idealism is part of our racial tradition, it should be kept. And if we look back and find that most of the people who ever did anything in this world, it was really a permanent value, were idealists, I think the time has come for science to become basically a sponsor of idealism, to prove beyond question that right principles will win, and that wrong principles and wrong uses will never end in anything but trouble. Science can sell that, and it has every reason to sell it, because science itself can see it. But it is very carefully overlooking some of these things, or simply has been trained out of seeing them. The public school child is being trained out of idealism, and then we wonder why he gets into some racket and gets in jail the first few months after he graduates from school. We do not do anything to prevent him losing character, but we will punish him if he does. This doesn't make sense. In the same way with science. Science doesn't actually say you shouldn't be an idealist, but it actually penalizes you instantly if you are. If you go out to find employment and it is known that you're an idealist, a great many doors will be closed to you. This should not be true. We should recognize integrities and honor them. And we find in all of these different walks of life, everything has been changed to reduce the idealistic factor. And I've read a great many translations of modern books out of older sources. And in every case, the idealism is played down. And if the idealism isn't played down, you will have to get the original edition, which is very scarce. So we have everywhere a constant intentional adulteration of values. If we do this in the next century, we're going to be in big trouble. We need more than anything else to take into that new century a conviction, a determination, a dedication to make it a better century than this one. And it shouldn't be too hard to beat this one, because for the little happiness we've had, we've paid with a great deal of pain. We have come very near to ravaging the earth. We have destroyed things we can never replace. All these things should become a cause of a little conscience. We should say to ourselves, let's not do it again. Let's try to do it right this time. Let's start in by believing that good is the most important thing in the world and is the synonym of a divine power at the source of life. Let us admit that we may not understand that power, but that it has to be there. And the proof of it, as the Kabbalists pointed out, the proof of the nature of deity is given to us in the rules of nature, the laws of nature. Nature is not lawless. Natural law is real. A natural law is a manifestation of something. So the idealist says it is a manifestation of divine law. Someone else says it's a manifestation of universal law. But whatever it is a manifestation, and as a manifestation, it proves that the wrong will never win, that there's no possibility of breaking the rules without suffering. Well, we're suffering enough, and probably will suffer a little more before the generation is over. And because of that, we should be very well intentioned at this time. I think there is enough encouragement coming up around us to give us a little strength to do better ourselves. There are more people trying to find out. There is greater determination to live better. There is more dedication to principles. And these things are good. But we should look forward with great hope to seeing these changes moving into the scientific and educational world. That we find these kind of rules in the hospitals and in the universities and in the clinics and in all the research laboratories. That in every case there should be greater emphasis upon integrity. That we should not adulterate our goods, we should not overcharge for our services, and we should not deny the rights of people to have their dreams and hopes without penalizing them. There is no doubt in the world that we are going to go into the 21st century as graduates from a school of hard knocks that will be difficult to duplicate. We've gone through the great problems of war, we've gone through catastrophes. We had thousands and millions of people cast out of their countries. We've had to do everything you can think of in the worst upset the world has ever known. And at the same time as this upset, we are continuing to develop abstract scientific theories. Theories that might possibly, in times of leisure, be an enjoyable pursuit, an entertainment value. But at this time, we can't afford some of them. What we need now is something to get governments and people and individuals and families back together. We are told now that the average marital relationship is getting to the point where 8 out of every 10 marriages will result in a divorce. Well, we can't really say that's particularly good. And we can't say that these very learned people in all their fields have made any valid contributions to this fact. We have some psychologists struggling with it. We have some domestic therapists working on it. But what we need is a broad statement from the top, from that which cannot be denied and is generally accepted, that these things are not as they should be, and that they must be corrected, and that the very simple methods of correcting them will be enforced. And the correction of all these things rests upon one thing: honesty. Honesty will correct 90% of the problems that confront us. And if we can't get that honesty ourselves, then it should be given to us by scientific dictum. We should have laws passed, we should have whatever rule is necessary, not to interfere with our privileges or problems of doing right, but putting a restraint upon our conscious abuse of power, conscious abuse of wealth, and conscious exploitation of each other. This would be a nice job for the scientific community, and I don't see any reason why it couldn't be done. But it would take a group of people who would take some of the billions that we have been expending trying to estimate the distance between here and some other planet. And we'll use this money to set up the necessary structure for education in the 21st century. A general reformation of the public school theory, putting it back to where it started from, putting it back to Comenius, the man who gave it to us in the first place, or doing something to help us to find ways of working with the young, such as the Montessori method and many others. The time has come to do some of these things and for the so-called learned powers to do them. We have laboratories all over the country. We have schools and universities full of courses. Let these things be united for a time at least on getting us into the next century in one piece. That out of all of this, we shall actually be able to move into a clean air. That we will not have to fight and face all these difficulties. Air pollution, water pollution, soil pollution. And these, the great abstract forces, go blissfully on their way, paying no attention to anything. When they finally get it forced, they have some cover that they hide under. And worst of all, most of the individuals involved are not themselves honest. And as a result of that, their own pleas have ulterior motives. We've got to have some honesty, we've got to have some ethics, we've got to have some reason, common sense, and a little idealism to get us into the next century. It's just about time to work on that. And we can get ourselves ready for that transition by ending our animosities, cleaning out the past in ourselves, and stepping across into a new century as new people. Not only the century will be conceived in liberty, but the individual will be reconceived in integrity. If we conceive these things and do them, we can start the new age with a great deal of help, because the information is available. The technical means of communicating it are available. It is generally known to some, but not to enough. And the power of opinion is rested in those who do not understand and do not want to understand. So there is only one grave problem, and that is that we have the right to make these corrections, and we would like to have the learned groups, such as schools, universities, hospitals, clinics, all that type, be in the vanguard to give popular confidence to the fact that old mistakes have been corrected, old misjudgments have been mended, and that we are going to go forward on the basis of the fatherhood of one divine parent and the brotherhood of all humanity. Now, if we go to work on that basis, we're going to get somewhere. And we can also do it without offending anyone. We do not need to offend any person of reasonable mind. And any individual who is offended at honesty deserves to be. And they'll have to gradually learn that he is not privileged to get away with it. He can be dishonest if he wants to, but he must take the consequences. The consequences of individual dishonesty are corruption. Of collective dishonesty are the collapse of nations. All these things we have to bear in mind. If we bear those things in mind and think straight about them, I think we can use science and not allow it to abuse itself. We can make it a greater instrument of good without destroying it, but having it work with us to transmute and transform. The alchemists are said to have been able to change base metals into gold. Scientists can do it also, but not on a practical economic basis. But these things can be happening. Science, as alchemy, can transmute society if it wants to. But it can only do this if it recognizes its sacred duty to dedicate all knowledge and all learning to all who need. Until this is accomplished, we will never have peace or happiness in this world. Well, that's it.